Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. So you want to add a child to your family. Perhaps birthing a child is impossible for you or desirable, but you still want to provide a loving home and are considering adoption. Well, how is that done? And what would that mean for you? Is it perhaps easier for married couples? Or maybe it's more difficult for singles? Or are there income requirements? Is it easier for women than it is for men? There are so many, many questions. Well, Saturday is the 35th annual National Adoption Day. And tonight we're going to answer all of those questions and many, many more for you. My guests tonight are Daryl Moak. He is an adoptive father, and also joining the conversation, the Honorable Kenya Sewanee Lopez. She is a magistrate judge on the Superior Court of the District of Columbia. And if you have any comments or if you have any questions about adoption in the District of Columbia, I certainly recommend that you give us a call. We have a great story for you tonight, but also lots of information to share with you regarding adoption in D.C. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. And I also invite you to tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Judge, thank you so much for joining the conversation. I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And Daryl, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you for inviting. Thank you.
Absolutely. Now, Daryl, you have a little girl. Is that her playing in the background?
No, actually, I had double booked myself, so I have a choir rehearsal happening at the same time, so I'm going to a separate room.
Okay. Well, as long as we don't hear too much praise in the background, we'll unless they want to join in on the conversation. So, let me first say congratulations, to you on being a father. Talk to me a little bit about your decision on adopting your little girl, Princess, and how did you come to that decision?
Well, over my lifetime, I've been a sort of a surrogate father to a lot of people who are some still in my life today. They're older, of course, and adults. Some of them have children of their own. And so I've always had a natural nurturing sort of parental type of desire in me. And so it comes out in a lot of ways through my work and through the work whether I was in church or in community. My focus on young people has always been a part of that. And so I've always been parenting. But I did want to have the experience of being a all-the-time parent. And so some of my friends have had children. I've been uncle to a lot of kids and all of that, and godfather to many. And in this particular instance, I had taken custody of a young teenager, and his mother was friends with my daughter's mother, and they came to me and said, "Hey, were you still thinking about having any other kids? I think you mentioned wanting to adopt or what have you." And there's a young woman who can't do this, and would you be willing to consider it? So I said, well, we'll meet and talk, and we did. We met, and it was very clear to me that adoption is what she wanted to do. And so we just initially began with just sort of a slow roll around it. They didn't want to just say, "Hey, I just met you tomorrow. I'm picking up your daughter and step in and take over," right? But that wasn't the plan. It ultimately sort of moved faster than I intended to move. And, she was in my home. I've had her since right around the time she turned one. I met her shortly before she turned one. And, so when I got her, she wasn't yet eating solid food. She was still on formula and, rice and oats and things like that. So everything that she was going to be able to do later has happened with me. Her first words, her first talking, her first moving, walking, talking, all of those things. And it's just been such a joy to see all of those. Every day was something new with her, every moment of a new thing happening. It's like, did she just do that? And did she just say that when she says her first words and, you know, and started moving? And, you know, she's very, very independent. She's her words to me now, I can do it by myself if I want to. And so she wants to get dressed on her own, and she wants to do all kinds of things. Some things she's too small to do, but she is just a great joy. So I decided once I met her and the family that this would be a good match and a good opportunity to give her a home, especially because someone was asking. I want my daughter to go somewhere where she'll have a good home and where someone's going to love her and take care of her, and that's what we agreed to, and that's what we did. It became a little more complicated down the road, but that's how it started.
How so?
Complicated?
Yes.
It became complicated because what I didn't know, there are things I didn't know. I didn't know that that the mom was still getting certain kind of benefits for her while I had her. And then when those ran out, there was a request for me to allow her to still use the child to get those kinds of benefits and things like that. And I, of course, when I wouldn't go along with that, then it became, I will undo this process. I'll stop everything and I'm not going to let it happen. Mm-hmm. And so it became a contested adoption. But at that point, she was by then going on probably a little over two. And so it was sort of like I wasn't going to allow her. And what my promise as a person to the people who I've been a godparent to or the kids that have been in my life, and particularly her mom, I said, I'm going to protect her as you would, as any parent would, and I'm going to even protect her from you if you're not healthy. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I stuck to. I stuck to the idea that what's going to be best for her is what I'm going to stay focused on. And so the adoption became a little contested in that mom was wanting to withdraw consent and change her mind about a lot of things. And so we just went through a longer court battle, which was very emotionally draining and financially difficult, because the system, you mentioned about, is it harder for men or women? And I'm not sure that it's any easier for either, but I think the system looks to women more and expects women to be parents. And so everything is set up to make things easier for the first thought about children and children's welfare and families are about moms and kids. Mm-hmm. There are programs called Moms and Babies, but dads can come too, but it's called Moms and Babies. So it's already sort of set up that way. But So then the system is set up in that because my adoption was a private adoption, meaning that I didn't get my child from the state, which meant that I wasn't afforded a lawyer, even though the mom and the unknown dad and the baby all got lawyers. And so my bills racked up while they didn't have any of those consequences. And so there's a point where you start wondering, oh my God, this is costing so much money. Should I just stop? And, mm-hmm. But when you have that child and she relies on you and only knows you, there's no way you can do that. So it didn't matter how much it was going to cost.
Yeah.
I just stuck with it. And thankfully, the courts were able to weigh the evidence and determine that the best place for her was to remain with me.
Absolutely. Judge, talk to me a little bit about how a process would begin if you do go from as Daryl was talking about, through the state, from day one, how does that first step start? Because it's my understanding that there are some 36 children currently up for adoption in the District of Columbia.
Sure. First of all, I wanted to congratulate Mr. Moach. Sounds like he did so many things to end up with this child. And, I always say when I finalize adoptions to the adoptive parents that they're really the superheroes of the world.
Sounds like it.
And in my view, they are, because it takes a special kind of person to kind of step up and take this responsibility when you're not even asked most of the time and you're not related to the child in any way. And on top of that, especially for him who knows what it's like to be in children's lives and how demanding it is to have children who depend on you. So congratulations, Mr. Moach. I'm so happy that things turned out really well for you. I'm actually a judge, and my current calendar is an abuse and neglect calendar. So the way that that I get adoption cases is initially the case hardly ever comes in as an adoption case. It comes as an abuse and neglect case. The child's either been neglected or abused by their parents. In most cases, the goal is for reunification with their parents or a family member. When that can happen, obviously the next choice would be next of kin. So the agency, the Child Welfare Agency, CFSA, will do a search for family members who may be willing to provide care for this child. And necessary, it never starts as an adoption question. It's just the child needs a placement. We're going to try to find a stable placement for the child. And it kind of grows organically as the case progresses, that either the foster parents fall in love with the child. The child like fits really great into their family. And sometimes they haven't even thought about adoption, but it becomes a possibility that is discussed once it's determined that, reunification is not likely to happen. Then the agency starts to have those conversations with the foster parents or with other family members, because really the goal is to get children in their forever home, in a stable environment, with people who are going to love them and take care of them and provide a safe home and education and all the other resources that they need until they reach the age of majority.
But is there anything that you can share with us about someone who wants to come into, who wants to adopt a child who is not, coming in from an abuse or neglect situation, who just wants to, who wants to open up their home?
Oh, sure. I mean, you can call 202-671-LOVE. That is the district's number if you're interested in adopting a child that's currently in need of an adoptive home. There are some foster parents who may decide at the beginning that their goal is adoption, and they will communicate that to the agency. And sometimes they will place children who they may think may end up in adoption with that family. So there's a lot of different ways that we end up in adoption. But if you are interested in adopting, and I hope that you are, in opening your home, especially during this time, I always love Adoption Day because to me it's a kickoff of the Thanksgiving season. It's really my favorite thing that happens at the courthouse. We usually, this is the second year we do it virtually, of course, but when we're in person, children come dressed up with their families and they're recognized and the judge signs their final adoption decree live in front of everyone. It's a court session. It's really a moving event. And so for me, it's a perfect start to the holiday season. And as we think about family and Thanksgiving, it really means a lot when you have these newly formed families in front of you right before this important holiday. And you know that those kids are going to have pretty much every holiday with this family that loves them. It's really heartwarming. And if you're interested in adopting, by all means, please call 202-671-LOVE.
Can you tell me a little bit about the process? Because we have a lot of people who are listening right now who beyond National Adoption Day, that's kind of the end. But yeah. But what's the beginning?
So I can tell you a little bit. Prior to this situation, I also, through my work in mental health, was also a trainer doing the foster parent, adoptive parent trainings. And so went through the training myself in Georgia and then again here in the D.C. area. And so there is a training that people go through when they want to become a foster or an adoptive parent. And that really is, I call it a training, but it's more like a seminar. It takes place over several weekends or several weeks and many hours. And they're asking you to do things to understand what it means to be a parent if you haven't been one, how to integrate a child into your home, the different kinds of nuances and challenges and the joys that will come along with that, different skill sets that people may not be thinking about that are necessary. And so you can go through that initial introduction, and that allows a person to become qualified to both be a foster parent, which is also a step sometimes away from the idea of adoption, as the judge was saying. And but the first steps really are making that phone call And then starting down the road, there's a home study that will be done where they'll come out and see your home to make sure that your home is set up and, you know, and ready for a child to come in. It's going to be a safe and healthy environment. They'll give you tips and ideas of things that you need to add in, like having smoke detectors and carbon detectors and having fire extinguishers and things like that, making sure that the children have the proper rooms and space and all of that kind of stuff. They'll go through those kinds of things with you. They'll talk about the different ways of looking at your home, if you need to have, you know, some things we don't think about, right, like plugging up electrical sockets or putting covers on the candles in the kitchen on the stove or the oven, you know, those kinds of things that, you know, you think, I'm getting a small kid, they're not tall enough to touch it, but you just never know. And by the time you realize that they're tall enough to touch it, right? So there are those kinds of trainings that people are going to get. The kind of really what it's more about is it's a seminar of understanding, but it also helps prepare people to be ready to do the best things they can as a parent and as a foster parent. It also allows people to talk about some of the things that we don't really talk about when we talk about the nice parts at the end, the challenges that may come from children, understanding children that have been through trauma, understanding children that may have been through some sort of medical challenge. My initial training was to adopt children that are to foster children that were medically fragile. This was earlier in the days of HIV a while ago when children were being born HIV positive, and that was, you know, until we're waiting to see what their immune system was going to do. But being born that way made them a medically fragile child. And so there are a lot of people at that time that wouldn't take those children. These are back in the days of, I'm a little older than I look sometimes, but back in the days of a lot of things. You can't see me on the radio, so it doesn't matter, right?
I have pictures of you, so, but go ahead.
But a lot of stigma around children with HIV or other kinds of medical illnesses, right? And so part of our work back then was to help people understand that these children deserve and need loving homes as well, and that it isn't as hard as one might think in some of those circumstances. So a lot of the seminar, I like to call it a seminar, a lot of that work is really helping people to answer questions that they don't know. If it's a couple, you talk about discipline. You talk about what are your rearing practices around discipline, around activities, things like that, that matter, because we know later on in other families where there's parents that have differences in the way they are disciplining their children, and that becomes a source of conflict in the family, right? So this is one of those ways of trying to prevent some of that, or to lessen it at least, to say, let's talk about all of the stuff, all the good stuff that happens, all the joys that happen, let's talk about when your child gets sick. And your job, and how can you manage that? And what are the laws that give you, like, the now family medical leave and all that kind of stuff? So people really understand that they really can do it, that the system wants them to be able to do it, and that there is a community of people out here that will support you. I've been so blessed to have an amazing community around me.
Hold on. You obviously have a lot to share. No, that's all right. And I need that information from you. And I have a lot of questions for both you and the judge, but I need to take a really short break. So please, Cherie calling from D.C., you're next. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This conversation continues on Sirius XM, channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. Stretches in for John Mons with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back in a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Saturday is the 35th annual National Adoption Day, and tonight we are talking about adoption in the District of Columbia. My guests are Daryl Moak. He is an adopted father. Also joining us, the Honorable Kenya Sewanee Lopez. She is a magistrate judge on the Superior Court of the District of Columbia. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you have a question about adoption in the District of Columbia, give us a call. Let me go to Cherie. She has been patiently waiting on the line. Cherie, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Harold.
Sure.
Good evening. So I am an adoptee. And so I wanted to know from the judge and from Daryl, I am 50 and I was adopted from birth. My records are sealed. And I wanted to know, how do I go about having my records unsealed? Because as I get older, I have the need for my medical information, and my adoptive parents don't know any of that information because they don't, you know, my records were sealed. So is there a process of going through that? And I've, you know, I've always been in the Washington metropolitan area. So I was just wondering, I do remember my caseworker's name. And she's, when we moved from D.C. to Maryland, she used to come out and visit. Her name was Mrs. Bass. So I was just wondering if there's a way to go through. It definitely was through the D.C. Adoption Agency. And just wanted to know if you had any answers.
Judge?
So I, unfortunately, Essex won't allow me to give you any legal advice, and that sounds like it's legal advice in terms of how you interpret whether adoption files can be open. I would just, I would start with the CFSA and see if you can talk to someone there about that.
Okay.
The Child and Family Services Agency. I'm sorry, I can't give you any legal advice. I'm prohibited from doing that.
Got you. I understand.
I don't know if Mr. Moak will have some answer for you.
That is hard. That's an unfortunate situation. I worry about that because I don't have certain information, even though I did know the family. And I think the judge is right. I think talking to CFSA and possibly an investigator, and you may have to go the route of finding an investigator who will try to dig into the case and see how they can uncover that information. But there, it's probably no easy way because it was sealed. But there may be some ways. And you can also go down to the courts for self-help. They have a self-help department down in the courts, and they may be able to point you in a direction that will allow you to find the resources that you need to do that.
Okay, great.
Well, Cherie, thank you so much, and good luck to you. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Christy calling from Laurel. Christy, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Christy, I guess we lost Christy. Give us a call back if you can. So, Judge, pursuant to the questions that I was asking earlier, and I'm sure a lot of people are you know, concerned about some of the stigma regarding adopting. Does it matter now if you are a single person versus a married? Is it easier if you're a married couple versus a single person? If you are, you know, perhaps a gay couple versus, a hetero couple? Does it matter if you are a six-figure person versus a person who is making, $50,000 a year or something like that? What kind of impediments might there be to adopting a child? What makes it easier or what makes it more difficult?
I say, assuming you go through the classes and you get certified, there is really no impediment after that. All we ask is for a loving home for a child. It doesn't need to be a loving home of two parents of a specific gender. Children don't really care about that. They just want.
I wasn't talking about the. I wasn't talking about the child.
Yeah, no, I'm saying that's right.
I know the child doesn't really care.
Children just need a home that is a loving environment. They're going to have an adult in their corner who's going to advocate for them at every level, and provide the security that children thrive. And that's really all we want. If you have that, then you'll be considered. So there is no impediment other than, making sure that the home checks off, like Mr. Moak is saying, and that, your background check comes back fine. There really are no other impediments. And we're really proud of that in the district. Not everywhere in the country is like that. But we're really proud here that we just literally are looking for loving homes for children. And that sometimes, looks like a grandmother. So there is the age is not an issue either. And I want to go back to the you know, Mr. Moak was talking about the village. I just recently finished an adoption, and the one good thing about being virtual, right, is that people from all over the world are really coming in into the finalization of the adoption, which normally if you were a person wouldn't happen. So that's one of the good things. But in this adoption, all of the members of that original class that they were together really bonded. And they call themselves like the love tribe or something like that, something really cute. And they were all there to support each other and had been supporting each other through the whole process. And I think all of them had adopted a child at some point. And now they have this loving community that is there for each other. And they provide respite care and, you know, each other's emergency, call if they need to. And I thought that was really great to see that love and support from really strangers that they just met in this class who were, actually went through the journey with them. So I think everybody has a specific individual journey in terms of leading to adoption, and they're all amazing if you start reading about them and knowing about them, and they're not all the same. So we welcome everyone who is willing to provide a loving home and can provide a loving home for a child.
You know, Daryl, yeah. How long did it take for... I know that there were, as you mentioned, obstacles regarding, you know, Princess, but how long did it take from beginning to end for you to legally say that Princess is my daughter, so that she is solely my daughter legally?
So that's a good question. There's two answers to that question. Originally, before it became complicated, when I got her, as I mentioned, she had just turned one. I started the adoption process about at 1.5, roughly, mm-hmm. And then and we probably would have been done with that by the time she was about 2.5-ish, if there hadn't been the complications that kicked the ball further down the road. And so I actually didn't complete my adoption with her until about a month after she turned 4. So for me, it took about 3 years. That was a long time. And part of that reason is because she hadn't been removed and wasn't in the system. And so there was a slightly different process because it was a private adoption. So we did still have CFSA involvement. They did still do all the home studies and checks and all that kind of stuff. And so that process moved along pretty smoothly. So normally I would guess that it takes maybe a year, maybe a little bit more than a year if everything is going well. It could be faster, but my experience was that I probably would have been close to about a year after the, there's 3 months of home checks and home visits that you have. They have to happen 30 days apart from each other. And then there are other things, you know, you have to get the court date, you know, and then CFSA has to make a report and turn in a report, and lots of people have to sign off on it. They're really, really careful to make sure they cover all the bases to make sure that nothing goes wrong, legally or otherwise in the process, and that children are in the best homes possible and the families have the best support. So that's what I'm guessing is a little around a year-ish of that, of the process till you finalize, on average, but I'm not completely sure.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about adoption ahead of the 35th Annual National Adoption Day, which is this Saturday, November 20th. So let me go to the phone lines. Willie, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Willie. What's on your mind?
You all have a good show.
Thank
good
you.
Show. I got nothing but props, respect for the young man on here. You know, maybe these classes, I mean, so many unexpected births in D.C., around the world, around the country. Maybe these classes that these parents have to go through ain't a bad idea for all of us, you know. But I live across the street from two guys, just adopted a little girl about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they always talking about, you know, how much they love her. But the other day, over in the corner store, they're talking about all the love that they get from that little girl, what they get out of that life. It's not only about what these adults are providing these girls and these boys. It's what these same kids are providing to these people. I mean, these people want to be parents, and this is a commitment. And, you know, so for Daryl, Princess call you dad, you know, like that first time. Tell me about what that was like. I mean, that would bring me to tears. And I know that judge, she says she's abused and all this other stuff. So when she gets, she sees and hears the worst of it. And so when she has someone like Daryl come to the courthouse doing all this, I mean, I need to know how she feels when she gets to see something like this, that sort of connection. These are connections that are going to be a lifetime.
Well, certainly, Daryl, you first and then Judge. Your thoughts about that?
The first time she said, Daddy, I was surprised because I wasn't using that term completely with her once it became sort of contested, right? I was very careful about not with the language. But everyone else around us was saying, where's your dad? Where's your dad? Where's your dad? You know, there's your dad. And so she just started saying it. And so she just calls me Daddy. She knows my name is Daryl. She has learned that over time. But she just calls me Dad or Daddy. And, you know, you're right about the love that the kids give you back. Just sometimes she just says she wants to climb on my shoulders and she wants to get on my back. She wants me to give her, horseback ride, right? Or she wants to, she'll come up at the weirdest times and we're sitting on this. She'll just lean over and she'll turn my face down and she'll give me a kiss, you know, or she'll put her, she wants to climb in my lap and she takes my arms and puts my arms around her as we watch something on TV and she snuggles up there. It is just amazing. Just that she has so much love and she feels safe. It seems to me that she feels safe and secure, and that's heartwarming. It's good. Every day I just think how blessed I am to be able to have that kind of unconditional love just heat on me. It is, it's awesome.
Judge, do you feel that, you know, sitting, you know, from your perch on high in the position that you are, that you do have an opportunity to make a decision that will be positively affecting not only the children, but also the families?
Absolutely. It's one of the most, amazing experience to be doing this kind of work. And obviously it takes my signature to make it official, but there's so many people that are working to make this happen that it really pales in comparison to the work that I do. You know, the social workers who are in the home every day, fielding the calls from the parents, you know, the parents, the adopted attorneys, you know, filing the petition. There's so many people that work to make that day a reality. And for me and for the people who do this day, this work day in and day out and really see children at their worst and family in crisis, it's a welcome day when I have a finalization of an adoption. I look so much forward to it because it really restores my faith in humanity that this child is really going to have a great life and I don't have to worry about that child anymore. I have other children in my caseload and I worry about them as well. I worry about all of them. But it's good to have some validation for the work that you're doing every day. Sometimes days are really hard in weeks. And I feel like adoptions, especially the finalizations, always come at the right moment when I kind of need that uplifting reminder of why I do this work and why it's so important to continue to do this work. Mm-hmm. And there was 186 adoptions in the district last fiscal year. And that's the most that we've had done in 4 years. So 118 of those were kids who were in the neglect system. And so I think that's something to be proud of. As a community, we've come together to reduce the number to 36, which is a high number. We never want to have any kids who are in need of adoption. But We did get a lot of kids adopted, even during the pandemic, which we're really proud about. But it is an amazing work to do, and I get teary-eyed all the time. I try to hide it, but sometimes you can't when you're on Zoom, on WebEx, which is what we use for court. But it is, I feel really blessed to be able to do this work. And again, it wouldn't be possible without, you know, the kindness and the heart of people who are willing to open their home to children who really need it.
What, Judge?
Can we point out just real quick, too, that there, the judge mentioned some people, but I want to give a shout-out to the guardian ad litem out there who yes. are these legal parents for these children during this process. Mm-hmm. And to tell adoptive folks when you're out there, really see a guardian ad litem and this and social workers as your allies and friends. And I know it's awkward to have to tell a lawyer what you're doing and get them to have them telling you to do stuff with your kid and the social workers coming in and out of your home and all that, but they really are doing it for a good reason, and they have to have a healthy detachment so that they don't get overly attached to you, attached to the child. So in case of a problem, they can deal with it, but they really do want the best. And so they are allies, and I always saw them as my ally. And so much so that my daughter's lawyer would tell me, I'm not your lawyer. You can't ask me that question. You have to talk to your own lawyer, right? But I was just, hey, I got a question for you, you know, and I ask her things about even raising a daughter as a male person, raising a daughter in the early
a
days.
A male person. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah, guardian ad litem, I mean, they represent the child, and they're oftentimes the person in the courtroom who would tell you what's happening because their client is the child in the best interest of the child. And so the court really values the participation of guardian ad litem and their assessment of people outside of court, because, you know, we see people in court, but we're not there on the ground. And so we rely on all the attorneys really to do their work so that, we can finalize this adoption. But the GALs really do a wonderful work as well. And I found that the people who do this work, then they're doing it because they really care about children and not necessarily for financial gain. There are some other jobs that you could do that way easier and probably pay more. And so it really helps when you have a dedicated group of professionals who really care about the best interests of the child to move the case forward.
Willie, thank you so much for contributing to the conversation. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. One of the things that I think, and Daryl, I suspect you know this, because you are older than you look, as you said. but the issue of, you know, adoption and the issue of stigma has certainly changed, particularly in the African American community. Mm-hmm. But your daughter is in a particularly unique situation in that this process started when she was extremely young. She remains extremely young, but certainly aware in one sense or another that this process was happening. What kind of age-appropriate conversations have you had with her about what is going on, number one, and for other parents who are going through this process, what kind of advice would you give to them about talking to children that are very young about adoption?
You know, I struggled with that because having been on the other end in mental health, working with families and children and people and hearing horror stories of kids that didn't know and they get older and then there's rebellion, they want to find the other families and, you know, things can be, and it just can be heart-wrenching. And I had to really decide what was best. And so given that my situation became contested, I had to start telling her a little bit earlier. I started telling her things like, Daddy loves you, Daddy loves you always, Daddy loves you forever. And so that no matter what happened, even if she did end up going back, she would know there was someone who did love her completely also, in addition to wherever she might end up. And but we were able to, she never really had to go to court. And so, and then COVID happened, and so she really didn't have to go. And so there was, except at one point, I think that there was a time where she did go and the judge saw her. But other than that, she really wasn't directly involved in the process, but I would tell her things like, you know, she knows about adoption. I've mentioned the word to her. She's maybe too young to fully understand what it means. But when everything was done, I went to her and we had a little mini celebration the first time. We said, hey, this is your forever home. And I didn't even know the district used that language. I was like, I'm your forever daddy. The court said that I get to be your daddy forever and you're my daughter. And she just looked at me like, okay, whatever, and kept playing and eating.
Can I have some fruit snacks now? Right.
When the appeal was withdrawn and so the case completely ended, which is only just a month or so ago, I told her that, you know, we're really, really, it's really done. This is ours. We're able to be together forever. The court said we could. I remind her, and we don't know her dad, her father, her biological father, but we do know her biological mother. And I remind her that her biological mother loved her very much, but just wasn't able to take care of her. And so that's why she's with me, because I loved her and wanted to do that. And that we're forever together. She's forever my daughter. I'm forever her daddy. And that's what we talk about now. As she gets older, if she wants to know more, have more, she can, and we will work through that as time goes on. But I didn't want it to be a secret and have her down the road run into someone who may be but related to her biologically in the area, say, hey, I know who you are. You're so-and-so. And you know, and her get confronted with that and be angry and hurt and not know and feel lost. I don't want that for her. So I'm telling her along the way the things that I think are appropriate. And we're not going to make a big deal out of it because we are a family and this is our family. I'm a single dad right now. And so to your other question you asked earlier, those questions didn't really come up around gender, sexual orientation, mm-hmm. age. They do ask how much money you make, you know, what your debt's like. You know, they want to know. But I'm not wealthy at all. Not yet anyway. And so I hope to be. But I struggled, you know, especially during COVID. It was very, very difficult to struggle when you're not having a full-time employment and all that stuff going through this process. So that they've been very supportive, and that never really became an issue. There's a lot of good that comes out of this process. But I try to talk to her in a way that doesn't make it a secret, but also doesn't make it a big deal. And then we talk about there are lots of different types of families. Some families have two mommies, some have two dads, some have a mom and a dad, some just have dads, some just have moms. Some families are made up of grandparents and children. Like, we just have general conversation when it comes up, which is off and on. It's not a regular, I don't like sit down and say, okay, now let's have a discussion about this, you know. She seems to get it at the age, at the level that she's at.
Interesting. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about adoption, specifically in D.C. Let's go back to the phone lines. Dee, calling from Arlington, Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. It's an interesting topic, and thank you for having this discussion. But I'm finally feeling like I'm kind of turning the corner on myself, on my life financially, and just pulling everything together. And I have been thinking about adopting because I'm now middle-aged, and I just have been thinking that, you know, in a couple of years when everything is all sorted, I'm starting a new job that's very well paid.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Hey.
Oh, very sudden.
Give me a referral.
Going to IT. I had no idea or else I would have done it 5 years ago.
Yeah, how about
but,
that?
But now I'm thinking like I would want to maybe look into adopting, and I was thinking maybe even siblings, because I know sometimes it's a little harder to adopt siblings, and I would have that income to do it. But I just wanted to hear a little bit more about adopting like older kids as opposed to young, because I'm really not interested in babies or really young kids. I just can't talk to them. I don't know what they're saying.
Well, Dee, let me just say one thing is for sure. I know that your children would definitely be entertained.
Articulate. So, but I wonder like what the challenge would be for having like, you know, someone who's basically single and, you know, just trying to adopt siblings. And, you know, could you have a discussion on that?
Judge, do you have any thoughts about what Dee is asking?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen all types of adoptions. There was someone at the courthouse who adopted an 18-year-old. If they have to consent up to 18, but I remember having a conversation with her, telling her, hey, you may be onto something, because I have two kids, and, you know, sleepless nights and changing diapers and all that. I said, he goes straight to college. Like, she helped him get into college. Now she's a grandmother. He had a baby, and he's in culinary school, and he was cooking for her. And I'm like, hey, you may be onto something. I mean, there are some benefits of adopting older children, and there definitely are, I think, the harder ones to place in a home. So I say go for it. And as a mother, I will tell you, there will be no perfect time to have children in your home. You can plan for everything, and it sounds like you've been planning. It just needs to happen. And you know, people always say, I don't know how you do it. I'm like, I have no other choice. I have to do it, you know? I have children. And so I think they also, being a parent, helps you focus into what you're going to put your energies to and be a little more selective. Before I had kids, I was involved in a whole bunch of things. And as soon as my son came, I realized, oh, my God, like, I really need to take stock of everything I'm doing and really figure out, focus on what's really important. And I thought that exercise was really good. And children have a way of focusing you to what's really important and what you can and cannot do. And you realize that after a while, you don't really miss the stuff you're not doing anymore. Maybe sometimes you miss going out to brunch with your friends or something like that. But, you know, if you have older children, you can leave them alone. You don't have to worry about that. And another thing I want to say is that even if you live in Virginia, you could definitely adopt children in the District of Columbia. There's an interstate compact agreement, and they work with the other jurisdiction. So that shouldn't be an issue as well. But, yeah, I say, and we love to keep children, siblings together. So I don't think that there's any drawbacks from you know, adopting older children. There's just different you know, they're coming into your home, it's going to be a little different than a baby.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're already grown people, depending on the age, mm-hmm. and that's something mm-hmm. that you have to consider. I would
there's
love,
different needs.
Absolutely, yeah. And a different language,
mm-hmm. and a different era of growing up.
That's right. So something to think about, Dee, but definitely worth investigating.
Yeah, Dee, I would also just say, because I hear you asking another question, and it's a question that people don't always want to touch on because we don't want to talk about those parts. And so the parts that we don't often want to talk about are the knowing what's happened with that child or those children prior to you getting them, and that sometimes they, all the love that you have to give them, they may resist at times because they're missing something that they either once had or something that they didn't have. Yeah. They're dealing with the stigma of that when they go to school and how people treat them if they know. But I think you have to be willing to work through it, willing to work through mental health challenges that may result on behavioral issues that may come. Be very realistic about understanding that those things could happen, and have a network, have your support system.
Daryl, I've got to stop you because I am out of time, but I appreciate all that you have offered in this conversation. Judge, also, thank you so much for your time. Dee, good luck to you as well.
Good luck.
That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, November 18th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.